If you would, let's go to the Lord in prayer before we begin. Heavenly Father, thank you for our time. Lord, help me to communicate clearly. Help me to communicate what is important, to give these folks a snapshot, a picture of really what, because of them, many of them, Lord, we are able to do and see and accomplish in Madagascar. By your grace, Lord. Thank you for this, Lord, and I ask that you would do that. In Jesus' name, amen. I want to begin by reading from the book of Psalms, Psalm 96. Sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, praise His name. Proclaim His salvation day after day. Declare His glory among the nations, His marvelous deeds among all people. And then in Psalm 97, the first few verses again, the Lord reigns. Let the earth be glad. Let the distant shores rejoice. Actually, we're just going to read the first verse there. And then Psalm 98, beginning in verse 1. Sing to the Lord a new song, for He has done marvelous things. His right hand and His holy arm have worked salvation for Him. The Lord has made His salvation known and revealed His righteousness to the nations. He has remembered His love and His faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. And one of the things we saw while we were in Madagascar is clearly that our God is revealing Himself and making Himself known to the nations. We saw the place where the first missionaries were martyred in Madagascar while we were there. They were martyred because the people, the native people said, no, these are foreign gods. They are not our gods. And they didn't want them bringing this into the nation. And they killed them, threw them off a cliff. And it's a cliff that's visible from the whole city of the capital city. It's right there before you almost everywhere you are. And yet the people know what happened there. And what's amazing is that this nation has subsequently been evangelized. And there actually is a lot of Christian influence. But the people that are still in faith with Christ, they're not just, you know, following some tradition of Christianity, but that have engaged Jesus Christ, they realize this is not a foreign God. This is the God who made the world, who proclaimed that His salvation would be made known to the distant shores, and that they are one of those distant shores. And they really see the vision of God, the Old Testament prophecies being fulfilled right before them as the gospel is brought and unleashed. It's really amazing. On August 2nd, I was sitting at the airport in Tampa having lunch with Yesu Padam. Many of you, because he's been here a couple of times, know who he is. He's a man from India that's done a lot of evangelism there and around the world in different places. He was telling me about a trip they took last year to Madagascar and the upcoming trip that they had at the end of August, and how they were going to be training pastors, and this was the first time they were ever going into a place and arranging pastors' trainings and evangelism meetings in the way that they were doing this. And as my heart was just leaping within me for joy for what he was talking about. And as he described it, he stopped and asked me, he says, and I'd like you to come. And I thought I must have misheard him because of his deep accent being from India. And so excuse me, you know, I'd like you to come. I said, you realize it's only a couple of weeks before you leave. And you've heard that part of the story if you've been here. And so I won't bore you with that. But the bottom line is the Lord made a way for Donna and I to go. And it was in our hearts to go, which is quite, I'm the most unlikely candidate to have done this. I mean, I really am. I'm not a world traveler. This is my first time to go on a real foreign mission trip in my life. I'm 51, or turned to that while I was there. But, I mean, so I was an unlikely candidate, but the Lord put me right in the middle of this, and it's just so much, so amazing what God did. I want to start by just kind of walking through some pictures as we go. We arrived on, was the 21st of August, and this man was the first man, aside from airport people, that I actually met. As we walked through the doors into the terminal, here he is standing there, big smile on his face, and holding a sign, Jerry and Donna Caesar. And I knew immediately he was our contact, and he spotted me because he had seen a picture. And so he pointed to me, and we embraced, and then there were three or four other people that came around. They grabbed our bags. They went to the place where the other bags were coming in. I pointed out our bags. They whisked them away, some young men carrying bags out. I mean, the bags were bigger than they were, so it was really kind of funny to watch them carry the bags because, you know, they're mostly about this tall and they're real skinny. And, you know, they're carrying like two big suitcases, each bigger than them, and out to the car. And then there's a tall man there who was a Mali Gacy man who was worked there at the airport. That became evident quickly. A fairly high official there at the airport, but he was part of the church that was arranging to bring us in, of which he's quasi-related in another city. And so this man asked for our passports. We give him our passports. He asks, is this all your luggage? He says, great. He says, wait here. He walks over to the windows where all the people coming off the plane are now in lines, going through immigration and customs to get into the country. And the line is, you know, large. And he goes in behind the window, talks to a few people, gets a couple things stamped. And then the next thing you know, we're out of the cars. It's like, we just went through all of that. I said, you know, small countries are great. As long as you have a guy in position, you know, all sorts of things can work to your advantage. And so everything was brought in, and we're in the cars, and we stop about 5 minutes down the road from the airport. And on the way there, I'm just really blown away, frankly, by the poverty that we saw just driving out of the place. I had anticipated poverty. I'd done some reading. I had no way of conceiving of the poverty that we saw. Somebody there on the trip from India told us that they, from what they could tell, the poverty there is worse than even in India, which blew my mind. The driving wasn't worse, but the poverty. The driving was bad, but nothing compared to India, but the poverty. And I don't know, probably depends on where you're at in India, but the point is, it was shocking. It was utterly shocking. But we arrived at this man's house, and he had a home that we might describe as, in our culture, as lower middle class, but in their culture would have been upper middle class. And, you know, it was behind a wall with barbed wire, because if not, you wouldn't have a home. I mean, you just have to have that protection because of the masses of people that are without. And so, if you would turn, this is in front of his home. We're there, and the man with the in the middle next to Feedy. The man I first showed you, Pastor Feedy's there, the short guy on the left. And the guy to his, our right of him, is the guy that was the airport official. And this is, Cho's taking the picture, but this is Deborah. They, some folks we'll talk about in a minute from South Korea that are living in Madagascar. And we went there to pick up Terry on the end down here. He was another fellow who had arrived the night before and was staying at their house that night. And then we're all being picked up and brought to the hotel about 40 minutes away where we will be staying. And if the next day I woke up, and if you go back, I looked at this last picture right there, and I suddenly realized that Pastor Feedy, the guy in the blue shirt, was short. The whole day I'd been around him, I didn't even realize he was short. Because of his smile and his just engaging personality, he just seemed tall. and so I realized, and I told him, I said, you know, it took me a day to figure out that you were short. And you know, the picture. And he told me, he said, you know, I had seen your picture before you came here, and I didn't really recognize you because you look so much better in the picture. So I said, well, that's great. Yeah, I love you too. But I said, you don't think the fact that I've been traveling for 2.5 days and haven't had any sleep has anything to do with this? He wasn't sure. But anyway, As we drove, my mind was just swirling to the hotel, just the scenes, the things that you just wouldn't imagine. Yesu Padam had collected a team from Canada, Australia, the United States, South Africa, India, that were there to train pastors, do evangelism, engage the people, do prison ministry, feed the poor. I mean, you name it. It was a very involved scenario. And all spearheaded by that couple from Korea. We got to the hotel, and if you go to that next, I mean, this is just right outside our hotel. I'm actually standing on the front porch of the hotel, and this is normal. People just carrying things down the street as they're going to market. Their hands are full. Sometimes they'll have a couple kids in their hands and things on their head. Sometimes it's furniture. I mean, it's just crazy. It's like, how do they do that? But they started about 5 in the morning carrying things to market. They'd be there all day, and then they'd carry them home for whatever the miles were to get there. the political situation, the first day, Feedy took Donna and I. We weren't going to go to bed, so we walked through town, and we're seeing things. And he stops at this place and sees this kind of monument there, and He says, this is where in 2009 when they had the coup, and I'm kind of counting, that's 4 years ago. You know, they had the coup that four people were killed right here, and because of the riots that were going on the street and people were being killed. And so this people have come together and made artwork in honor of this. And it was really nice art. But and I'm thinking, wow, this is only 3 blocks from like our hotel where they were like killing people. And I'm saying, that's great. And so the next day, they're letting us know at dinner time, they're saying, hey, tonight we have to stay in the hotel because the president, the guy who did the coup 4 years ago, is making a big announcement. And either he's going to announce that he's going to allow elections and he's not going to be running and everybody will be happy, or he's going to announce that there will not be elections, or that he will have elections and he will be running, one of the two, because if he's running, then he's got it fixed. And if that happens, then there could be riots in the street. And I'm thinking, great, we're staying in the hotel, of course, but, you know, we're only 3 blocks from where they were killing people. I'm not sure how comforting that is, but that's great. Fortunately, the announcement was that there will be elections in October, and he will not be running. We'll wait and see if that actually happens, but everybody seems hopeful after that occurred. The poverty there, starting in 2009, essentially doubled, because with the coup, a trade embargo was put on by our country and others. Which basically has resulted in not the president suffering, he's fine, he's making lots of money, but the people, basically their factories have shut down, all their companies have shut down, unemployment has skyrocketed, there's nowhere to get a job, and people are on the streets trying to sell you stuff that you don't need, and there's 100 of them selling the same thing. And you, at first you think, these people are just persistent, but after a while you figure out, if they don't make the sale, they don't eat tonight. But one lady who sold us some vanilla followed us for 30 minutes. We went into a store, she waited outside, when we came back out, she started again. And I finally bought the vanilla. I mean, I was like, you know, I'm buying this vanilla. Number one, because if I had a company back home, I would hire her and bring her. Because I couldn't get college graduates to sell this hard. So, you know, number one. And number two, I couldn't stand the thought of not buying from her. So, the first city we were in was Antananarivo. That was a capital city. And again, outside our hotel. And let me see, go through these pictures if you would. This is just a typical scene down the street. That's the street. They're carrying rice, I believe it is. And this is at the church we preached at the first Sunday. On the right would have been the church building here. It's surrounded by rice fields and brick-making fields, mud fields. And the people would walk about half a mile to get to where they would be. They're dropped off by a bus or park if they had a car, and then walk over to get to where the church is. This is where they're making bricks. I mean, this is everywhere. I mean, I literally saw millions and millions of bricks while I was there being made. There's hardly an inch of ground that's either not a rice field or a brick-making field. And that's what the people can do. They can collect the mud, they can make bricks, they can bake them, they can build houses, they can sell the bricks. They carry on their heads sometimes pallets of bricks that are, you know, cubically, to, you know, what would that be, 300 bricks, 200 bricks on a pallet on top of their head carrying it down the road. It's mind-boggling. That's Jesu Potom, training pastors, the first week we were there in the church where that was being held, which was also the one I preached at on that Sunday. It held 2,000 people. I was preaching the early service. I figured it would be lightly attended because it started at 7 o'clock. I got there, and we arrived a few minutes early. It was packed. You couldn't find a seat. You go to the outside. They had an overflow section with chairs set up under a tent and a video projection just to kind of project the meeting, and it was packed, mobbed. People at 7 o'clock in the morning. Of course, the roosters start crowing at 3:30 in Madagascar, but that's another story. Makes you wonder what's wrong with them. But anyway, so this is Pastor in Jatu. This is not his church where it was being held, but he is the pastor who actually organized these pastors' training meetings and all the evangelism meetings. And his church put the whole thing together and was the workers behind it. And he has a church of 14,000, primarily 50% university students. They are the future of that nation. He is influencing that entire island, I mean, of 22 million people. They are working and sending their people as missionaries into that whole island to bring the gospel. He is one of the most humble and gracious men I've ever met. He's just an amazing individual. And just grew in deep love for that man and what he is doing. You go in his home, it's a man, church of 14,000. Many of the pastors there, I think, live above what they should, well above the means of their people. this is a man with 14,000 people who could live however he wanted. And you walk in his home. It's a very meager home and no furniture. You sit on the floor other than a few pieces of necessary furniture. That's just how he lives. And he pours it back into reaching that island for the gospel. And his manner, his way is just unlike anybody else we met while we were there. It was amazing. This is the pastor of the church where we were at, where I preached on Sunday. His name is Adolf, Pastor Adolf. Now, these next three slides, you just watch the cart here in the center. We're going about 15, probably 20 miles an hour. And this is the traffic. Other cars are coming at us. He's in our lane. And the next slide, he's right there. Yes, right in front of us. I'm shooting straight forward out our windshield. And yes, we're going 15 or 20 miles an hour. And somehow or other, he was not hit. And he was right behind us. And the next thing I turned to look at, how they do it, I do not know. This is rice fields and huts and brick making and you name it going on. A cart, typical scene. This is a building. My wife was fascinated by the scaffolding that was on the buildings. They're building this house. Obviously, somebody with money is having this built, building of some sort. But the scaffolding is essentially sticks with things going. I mean, ain't no way I'm getting on that. And sometimes you'd see it 6 and 7 stories tall working on old buildings and fixing them up. And it's like, I don't know how many people fall off these a week. But rice fields here, bricks. If you back up, if you see the smoke in the background, that's people cooking the bricks, as they like to call it. Firing the bricks, as I would call it. Next slide. And this is a typical market street, just going down the streets. That's everywhere and no place. It's not like they have zoning for where you put a business. If you open a business, you just open it where you find a spot, usually in front of a house or another business. But if there's a sidewalk, there's a business. And this is in the second city we went to. This is Tomatavi or Tomasina. Every city has two or three names, usually long. And that was the Indian Ocean. I'm going to have Donna talk about this in just a second. First, though, I just want to talk briefly about the training of the pastors. I went there really in my heart primarily for that, and the Lord gave me some messages while we were there to teach. Preach the Word was the first message. It's really about what it means to take the Scriptures and teach from the Scriptures, not just use the Scriptures to teach what we want. There's a real famine for expository and exegetical preaching in that nation. I mean, to be honest with you, most of what I experience would say that not only do they not have the training to do it, but they're not getting the training to do it. They're getting stuff that would really steer them in the wrong direction primarily. And so given an opportunity to train pastors, that's the direction I went and equipped. And they sucked it up. They loved it. They were just really engaged by it. And Yesu Padam, who's never done something like this before, really didn't know exactly, you know, pulling this kind of thing together. He admitted, I didn't know exactly who I should bring and what I should do. But he just basically started slotting me as often as he could get me to teach to these pastors. He just, Jerry, I'm going to have you focus on these pastors. And he said, you know, I've brought people here who are not ready to teach pastors. That's become obvious to me. But you are, and I want you to train pastors, and I want to get you. And so every day I was in there. One day I was too sick to come, but other than that, it had me in just training and equipping pastors, and what a privilege it was. And Pastor Njatu, the pastor of the Church of 14,000, on our way to the airport as we were done, he actually ended up taking us, was telling me that of all the things that he thought benefited, it was the training of their pastors on how to preach and teach the Bible that I brought that seemed to have the most effect. And I was just blown away by that. It's hard to describe what a joy that is to see that they're appreciative. And as I'm there and I'm teaching this, I'm thinking to myself, the only reason I'm here doing this is because of this church back home that has an appetite for the Word of God, that loves the gospel. And I'm only bringing what we're able to do here. I'm only trying to replicate there, in some sense, the seeds of what creates and is the gospel bearing fruit here because of the way you apply it to your lives. And I was just blown away by that, how amazing it was. Yesu Padam, a humble man. He put everybody before himself. It was amazing. But one thing I saw as we engaged, and you'll see some pictures in a minute, that man's an evangelist. He preaches his heart out in evangelism settings, and people just, I mean, they just get saved. It's just crazy. It's just amazing. We'll see a picture of the prison in a minute. Honey, would you talk a little bit about, we have a microphone
We saw Deborah earlier. She's a young Korean woman, and her husband were there, and just faithful servants of the Lord. And anyway, they spent some time in India with Yesu Padam and Monica, and I believe Yesu Padam and Monica asked them to go to...
No, they asked. The Lord put it on their heart to go
to Madagascar. Okay. Anyway, they are now in Madagascar, and they are trying with their best efforts to duplicate the ministry that's going on in India with Love and Care Ministries. So they are feeding about 120 children daily lunch. They serve them lunch, and it's primarily the only meal that they get for the day. And it is, I mean, we help serve, and it was rice and a little bit of chicken and some broth, and that was going to be what they had for the day. And then they would walk and make their way home to the nearby huts, and huts that were without running water, huts that were without electricity, and dirt floors. So a whole new meaning to the word dirt poor. And anyway, so amazing ministry that they're trying to do there is they are they're schooling the children during the school year. School starts in October. They enrollment this year, they're hoping to have about 200 children, and there's some a newer building going up, and they would like to put more buildings up. But each of these, I think the one building that they're in the midst of right now to complete that. Complete that, it's going to be the cost of
$8,500.
About $8,500, yeah. And as we went there, they had prepared a program for us and a skit and then some singing, and it was all in glorification of the Lord. I mean, they were just glorifying the Lord. It was just precious. And you would have thought the king and queen of somewhere was coming, but the way they celebrated and welcomed us, it was just precious. And they, so we did that, and then we had news for them also that Monica and Yesu Padam, the orphanage in India, had collected clothes, and they were bringing the children some clothes. And the big news was that these children were going to get uniforms this year for school, and so they were, you know, ecstatic. And so we were bringing them uniforms and, you know, clothing. And anyway, so. Yeah, this is the building that they're in the process of in just really needing to finish. And they need about 15 new desks, or was it 15 new desks at about $40 for this next school year to start. So they're needing some help there. And but they're just this is a very, very poor village. And like I said, all the huts nearby, very, very, very poor. And they're reaching these kids and going to teach them English and you know, trying to give them an education. And school is optional there. Most kids just don't go to school. And they're just on the street. They're on the street begging daily, and that's what they do. And so the work that Deborah and Cho are doing is amazing, and everything in me wants to get behind it.
Amen. this is just a picture from the balcony of the hotel. Where we were staying in the second city, as well as where the conference room is, where we were housing the pastor's training. And this is looking the other direction, just a typical day in the street. Now, this is looking up. I'm on the second floor balcony looking up at the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh floors. And you might notice something missing on all those balconies. That would be a guardrail. There is not a single concept in the entire country of liability. You die at your own dumb fault. I mean, honestly, you walk down the sidewalks in the city and there are manholes without covers, children running, playing, they drop. I mean, it's just like you learn to dodge the hole. I mean, if you don't dodge the hole, well, you're not around next week to tell about it. And so, I mean, that's just the way life is, and the traffic, and I never saw one piece of evidence that anybody understood the concept of liability. There, and it was just one of those things. You just go, "Wow, it's completely unbelievable." As you walk through life, there. This is one of their worship songs up on the screen in their language. The only word I really recognize on there is Jesus in the top right corner. So to give you some idea, their worship is amazing. The way they express themselves and their almost a sign language they use when they worship that is really cool. This is the second city we're at, the training of the pastors in the conference room. That's Pastor Feedy, who's translating for me here. And it's funny, though, when he would then translate, he would do whatever my hand motions were. I mean, he would translate in every way. I mean, he would just carry it right through. And so the other guy. I did discover, though, I did stump him once. I was going along, and I just said, baloney. Now, that doesn't translate well. A, he didn't know what baloney was. That was fortunate. And B, of course, when I say baloney, I'm not talking about baloney. I'm talking about nonsense. So I explained that to him. That happened in the first city. So in the second city, I wanted to see how well he had learned. So I did the same thing. I said baloney. And he laughed and he explained it. And, you know, he went on, nonsense. He got it. So we taught him something there. This is just a young boy. This is, as we're walking, we had to drive a couple miles down these dirt roads, which was very difficult. The whole time I'm thinking, why are we driving? We should just walk. We finally get to a point where we have to walk the rest, you know, the next quarter or half a mile to get to the school. But this is just a boy sitting outside his house. In the next slide. And this is the kids having gotten their uniforms the next day as we brought them. And that's Donna feeding them their lunch for the day. They do actually have real estate business there. I discovered this is a hut for sale. And this is a market on the side of the road as we're traveling between the cities. Lots of produce. And they don't grow the produce. They go up and down the rivers and mountains collecting it and bringing it because God grows it, just produces food to feed that nation. And they bring it to the side of the road and they sell it, and then trucks buy it and bring it to the cities. It's an amazing event. And then, of course, people catch eels in the river and sell them. And Renee, who is the other translator, actually highly educated guy, spent a year in Britain at university away from his family just getting his master's. But he's buying eel for dinner that night, and so he's going to throw it in the back of the bus. And it's going to go there unrefrigerated the rest of the way. This is a traffic jam on our 10.5-hour road trip back in the middle of a town that we were in. And this is Donna's here in the middle. They're down by the beach feeding the hungry children who came to be fed. They feed them once a week and every Saturday. They happened to be doing it in the middle of the week this week. But and then this is at a prison. We were able to go into a prison. They do some prison ministry there, and they've gotten permission. While we were there, there were 800 prisoners, men and women, that were brought together into this courtyard area, and that was where we were speaking from, to hear the gospel. As Yesu Padam began to preach and share Christ, and it was really amazing to hear him share. One of the other guys that was with us, also Sharon, who does a lot of prison ministry, there's a guy who would have been, I think, Sean, about where you are from me, okay? So he's about that far out, and he's standing in the middle of these guys, and he's hard. He's got that cocky smile on his face like this. I'm not paying any attention to this. And his guys were preaching. I caught his eyes, and he caught mine. And I gave him that look because, of course, we wouldn't have any common language, nor could we even talk because he's over there and I'm over here. But I gave him that look that said, I know you're pretending you're not going to let this affect you. And he knew exactly what I was thinking. And he smiled and he looked back and he said, okay, I got you. And so periodically throughout, we'd just keep, you know, making eye contact. About 3/4 of the way through, his arms came down. He started clapping. He started engaging. At the end of that meeting, when they asked who wanted to accept Christ, he's got his hand up. People are just everywhere wanting to accept Christ. I think well over 200 people accepted Christ that day, and they wanted a Bible, and they lined up to get Bible. After about 200 Bibles, we ran out. People wanted Bibles. They didn't have anything to read. They wanted them, and later, as we went back, we went over to dedicate the church building. We dedicated, they're building a church on the prison grounds to preach the gospel to these guys every week, so they have a place to worship, and they got permission for that to be done, and we broke ground and laid bricks in and put cement. It was really amazing, but afterward, he had his Bible. And he catches me from across the way, and he holds it up. He is so pleased to have a Bible. And anyway, it's just, what a joy. That's Yesu Padam preaching and evangelizing. He's asked people to raise their hand, and they just came forward. I mean, they just pressed toward the front to pray. It was really amazing. And this is Cho and Deborah, the couple that moved from South Korea, they had spent a couple of years at Love and Care in India and had learned what was going on there and really believed the Lord called them. They're there for at least 10 years, maybe 15 in that area. And they're there to feed the poor, to bring the gospel. But they're doing everything in a way to make sure that the local people are in charge, the local pastors and so forth. So that's amazing. We'll be hearing more about them in the future, no doubt. But just to give you some idea of what that was like, thank you for all your support. Thank you for letting us be there. And thank you for your prayers while we were there. So much appreciate it.